FT Houston.
There's no more left to buy and sell. There's no more left in the well. The gallon of gas can't be purchased anywhere.
Any amount of cash.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to this hopefully begging-free edition of Technology Bites.
We may be begging for something, but not money. All right. Well, I think that we'll be fine without begging tonight. And speaking of begging, I do need to say thanks to Roger, who made a pledge online at the KPFT site. You have a tablet.
Yeah, my laptop is back at the office running a big geoanalysis. It had been running for about 4 hours. It had 3 more hours left in it, and I wasn't going to start it over tonight, so I just left it. So I'm on my Nexus stable. We'll see how it works.
Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
The Roof House.
And all of us are here. He's not... Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason to be here tonight, and that reason is not a fundraiser. So we're very glad. Roger made a very generous pledge on the web. So I don't know what our totals were, but it's...
I think we were like 1650 when we left.
And it's way above that now.
Can that carry over to the next pledge drive?
I wish. Please? Yeah, please? They won't do that.
Please.
I wish, but
KPFT,
no.
Please.
No, they don't do that. All right, so welcome to the show, and we hope you're going to stick around for 2 hours, or at least as long as you can, because it's going to be awesome. I'm still jazzed up from Comic Palooza.
What?
Yeah.
You went to Comic Palooza?
I did go to Comic Palooza.
I didn't go.
Why didn't you go?
I don't know. I wasn't invited.
You know, every time something like this comes up, and I say, "Hey, Groove House," and he's like, "I don't want to go to that."
No, he goes, "I might come by."
Maybe. One of the people that was involved with the event contacted Technology Bites and had some press passes. So,
sweet.
Of course, I got there, and the person I talked to had no idea what I was talking about. But we got it sorted out, and it was a lot of fun. It was there were a lot of nerds and geeks there. It was a real geek gathering.
You said there was a con within a con?
There was the
Galacticon.
Galacticon within the con, which had a lot of the original cast from the original Battlestar Galactica.
Lorne Greene?
Mummified Lorne Greene.
Was he there?
No.
No.
Okay. But Adama was there.
Wait.
The original one and the one from the reboot. Same guy. But yeah, it was a
wow.
It was a hoot. Arc-Attack played, and that was fun. The best thing I saw was Arc-Attack. I don't know if you know who Arc-Attack is, but they're the ones that they have the two
The Tesla coils.
Tesla coils. Yes. And they have this they have a Faraday cage set up for this show. They had a Faraday cage set up that people from the audience could actually go into the cage, and they play music and the things like shooting lightning bolts into the Faraday cage. And so they said they were going to play one song, like some theme song from some other movie. But when they got the people in, they were all dressed up like Star Trek characters. So they had like the original series Star Trek uniforms on, and so they played the Imperial March from Star Wars while they were in the cage, made them dance and shot it with electricity. It was very,
wow.
It was so nerdy.
Red shirts.
There was one red shirt in there. She didn't die. But everybody was rooting for her. So that was a lot of fun.
12 Trekkies enter, one Trekkie leaves. Little Mad Max. Thunderdome.
Did you see that demotivational poster or whatever, they had a picture of a bunch of Star Trek red shirts, and it was called The Walking Dead.
Oh, I've seen that. Yes, I've seen that.
All right, well, visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website for the show, and you'll want to check that out for all of your informational needs, especially like the upcoming Geek Gathering, which...
It must be this Friday because this is the first Saturday.
No, this is not the first Saturday.
After the last Tuesday.
Is. Oh, no, this Saturday is the first Saturday.
Yeah, it's the first Saturday of the month.
Yeah, but it's the first Friday after the first Saturday, unless the first Friday comes before the first Saturday.
Or if it's a leap year.
Not this, please. I'd rather do fundraiser than have this.
But I thought,
all right, let's push the phones over.
But I thought the first Friday was before the first Saturday.
Not always.
Not always, that's correct.
See, that's what I was trying to tell y'all a couple of months ago.
We got what you were telling us a couple of months ago.
We don't want to hear it again.
Too late.
Anyway, we got a Geek Gathering coming up.
We got a Geek Gathering coming up a week from Friday.
Killer.
And
which is still the first Friday.
It's the first Friday.
It's always the first Friday.
Apparently, you know, well, then there's another event happening at the Geek Gathering, at the place where we're having the Geek Gathering.
Is there going to be a rumble?
There's... Probably not.
It's a gathering within a gathering?
Is it Galacticon? Cylacon?
Cylacon.
Cylacon?
Bronycon?
No.
It's Purple Rainicon.
It's Purple Rainicon. It's an 80s party.
What?
Well, yeah.
That'd probably be all right.
It's up on the roof. Up on the roof.
We're down below.
Yeah.
We got the lower
bunk. The fire down below.
I'll be down below.
Yeah, so we have that coming up. So
hopefully they'll have more than one
bartender. Hopefully. I have to have words with Con Lu.
I hope they don't need any like flash dance reenactments up there because the water could spill onto us.
And short out our electronics.
It's Purple Rain. It's not flash dance. So it'll be motorcycles.
It just said it was an 80s theme.
It'll be motorcycles coming over the wall at us.
Yeah, lots of doves
flying. Or maybe doves flying, yeah.
Hair gel.
Pooping on our cars.
It's the gathering formerly known as the Geek Gathering.
There you go.
Doves crying.
Symbol. It's just a symbol now.
Little red Corvettes.
Raspberry Darling Berets.
Nikki. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
We're lucky. See how Darling Nikki.
All right. Phone number is 713-526-5738. We're going to be taking your calls a little bit later in the show. We're also hanging out on IRC. That's Internet Relay Chat.
Get in the chat room.
And hang out with us. It's a show within a show. IRC.cuckoo.com. Channel is Tech Bytes. You can also go to the website, geekradio.com, and click on the IRC link and join the channel using Java.
People who like to use Twitter as a chat client, well, this is a chat client. This is what it's really all about.
Yeah. Groovehouse knows. So you can do that. Did we lose Pete? Is that what I heard? You know, did I hear the sound?
I'm really not sure. We did drop him, and then I called him back, and it says connected, but it's not showing any technical call info, so I don't think he's actually there.
So what does that mean for us?
No news right now.
Well, I know that.
Until we hear his voice.
All right, so we're going to get Peter Hughes back on the line. There he is.
Hello.
No. I just disconnected what I think was a ghost call anyway.
Ghost call?
Oh.
Is it paranormal? Was it a friendly ghost?
Paranormal geek activity. Wow, we could have a new show on.
You know what I learned? I was kind of aware of this, but I didn't know it for sure. I didn't know it. Like, it wasn't like in my forebrain of knowledge.
Tell us.
But it became in my forebrain of knowledge is that there is a Houston group of people. There's two Houston groups. One I did not know about at all. One I sort of knew about. One that I didn't know about at all is a group of people that act out. They're cosplayers for a video game, and now I forgot the name of the video game. But it's a
I'll have available. To look.
What?
He's not available.
Not available. But the other one is there's a group of people that they're cosplayers for Ghostbusters.
What?
They dress up like Ghostbusters.
Okay.
And so they were there at the con, and I had this brilliant idea for a mashup that the Ghostbusters need to crash one of the haunted Houston walks.
There you go. That would be fun.
That would be awesome.
That would be.
Yeah.
So what's the other group you mentioned?
Now I have to Fallout. Talking. Fallout. You know the game Fallout?
Oh, yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
There's a group of people called Fallout Houston.
Okay.
And they are actually they've made some short films where they've taken the storyline from the Fallout game.
Yeah.
And set it in Texas, and so they've extended the storyline down to Texas, and they're doing these films. If you do, if you look on Facebook and YouTube for Fallout Houston, they got their stuff up there, and
the
they're
masks and
they've
the...
got their like, people dressed as the Rangers, people dressed as you know, all kinds of characters from it. It's they're very interesting, very odd.
Cool.
People love that stuff. There's a lot of nerds at the con. I got a lot of nerds.
We should have had Geek Gathering flyers to pass out.
We should have a booth at the next one.
There you go. You got connections. You got connections, mister.
I'll talk to them about it. That might be interesting. There's plenty of space. We could have done it. Could have a technology bite.
Do they charge for booths at the
I would see if I could give us one.
Well, yeah, we're not selling anything.
We should be able to work something out.
We should be able to work something out.
Mm-hmm.
We could have an Arduino booth. That would be even better than
just bring stuff out, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like Geek Gathering at the con. It could be a gathering within the con.
But we have to wear costumes, right? We can't.
Our own costumes. You just got to look like you do on the show.
Yeah. Your radio there you go. Radio costume.
You can't be naked.
Huh.
Crap. Although there was a guy that was dangerously close and should have had way more clothes on.
Was he dressed in costume or what was
he
the
deal?
He
was in costume, but it was basically.
Was he Adam?
It was like a pair of tidy whities that were red.
Oh, no.
Basically.
Who was he?
I don't know. He was he was scaring everyone, but especially me. He made me uncomfortable.
Did you get photos of him?
No.
Mr. Press Pass?
No.
No.
I didn't. There were some things that you just didn't want to take a picture of. Just did not want those to last forever.
So, to completely change the subject to something else, because this is something people are really going to want to hear about.
Oh. Okay.
You got a new device.
I did. I bought a new computer.
This is what people listen to this show.
Cool. Is it like a Windows touchscreen thing?
Yeah,
like
right. He got a Windows 8 touchscreen PC. Yeah.
Had to find a happy place after seeing the large
man
in the red underwear.
From Lenovo, right?
It was an Acer. No, I've been torn because I want a new desktop and I want a new laptop. I feel like both of my devices have kind of outlived their usefulness, and I want both, but I can't afford both. So I labored over the decision between getting a new laptop and getting a new desktop, and finally came to the realization that if I clean my damn office, that a desktop would be a better choice. Because I need something with a nice big display and that has lots of horsepower for processing my images, because I'm working on these Gigunga, like 25 meg raw files.
Gigunga.
Yeah.
Gigunga.
Gigawatts of JPEGs. Now I'm working in raw
large
with
files.
Large files, and Lightroom does its best to try to render the previews and stuff, and it's just... It's not. It's the workflow has just kind of got a little stagger in it.
It's taxing.
I don't like it. So
it's become heavy room.
So nothing fixes that problem like a tasty Windows 8 machine with, you know, 32 gig of RAM, maybe a 3 terabyte hard drive, nice 30-inch touchscreen. That's what you bought, right?
No.
Wrong.
Oh.
Wrong.
Should I have? Is that what you're saying, Dwight?
Oh, I'm not. No, I'm not.
No,
saying
I got something that will. You know, I don't care about touchscreen, but I bought a new iMac. I bought a 27-inch iMac,
wow.
And it's 27-inch iMac. I only got 8 gigs of RAM. I can buy more RAM for it. It's easy on the new iMac, too, to install additional RAM. So I can get RAM pretty cheap. But this one, because it's refurb, now if you go to the Apple store online, that was the other thing. I had to wrestle with immediate gratification. I tried to go to Best Buy and buy one, but they didn't have one of the specs that I liked. And I tried to go to the Apple store and buy one, and they didn't have one.
What?
The specs that I like. They have base models at the store, which right. is very disappointing.
Oh, you have to order.
So
custom.
If you want the faster processor or you want additional video right. memory or you want any of that stuff, you have to buy it online.
Yeah.
Where you can specify it to your heart's desire.
They tend to have a better selection of notebook computers at the store.
That might be true.
Other stuff is for the masses. Yeah.
Right. So I went out, and I was really glad I didn't go all the way out to the Highland Village Apple store. I said, I'll go to the one at Memorial City Mall, which is close to my house, although I don't feel comfortable at Memorial City Mall.
Did you use the Apple store app? Because you can check the inventory at various stores and see what they have.
It didn't matter. They have the set ones. They have an iPad glued to the tabletop or whatever that shows you. So they've got a preset page right. that shows you what they have. Right. This is what we have.
Right.
And it wasn't one that was specific for that store. It was inventory related. It's just, this is what we care.
Right.
And so that just soured me on the whole idea. I said, okay, I don't need immediate gratification. I'll just go online and check and see. And I'd been doing this already, so I had an idea. So I could definitely get what I want, and I can probably save money if I buy it online. I went ahead and looked at Mac Mall, but Apple on their website has a section for refurbished models. And I bought my last iMac was refurbished. So this one, I decided to go with refurbished, and they have a brand new, state-of-the-art, latest model, 27-inch iMac with some nice upgrades on it. So instead of having a 512 or a gig of video memory, it's got 2 gigs of video memory. It's got the terabyte Fusion drive, which has got part of the drive is SSD and the rest of the drive is regular SATA. And I specced it out of what it would cost to buy new from Apple by configuring it yourself. And then I looked in their refurb and found one that was just like it. Saved about $500.
So here's an interesting thing about the Fusion drive. The ability to do that is actually built into OS X. So you could, say, with a Mac Pro where you use your own components,
right.
you actually could cobble that together and create the Fusion drive yourself. There's a couple of switches in the software. You just flick them on, and it will
do that.
Essentially, it's kind of it raids an SSD and that together and makes it one drive.
Yeah. When you're looking at the price, I mean, you can certainly get a lot of computer for yourself if you buy a Mac Pro, but you pay for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they are. If you think Apple's proud of their stuff, go start looking at their full blown desktops. And I didn't have to buy a new refrigerator too, so I had to get some home tech. So I got a new refrigerator as well, not from the Apple Store. You can't configure those online.
Right. Then and the Mac Pro, you know, its future may be limited. Although there's some speculation that this, you know, Tim Cook has said that he's going to build a Mac in the United States, and in fact said recently it'll be built in Texas. And
it means it'll be big.
And so it could be the Mac Pro, because that one is long overdue for an update, and I wouldn't be surprised if that, you know, it's easier to build. But what's interesting about, he hadn't said where in Texas, and the obvious place is in Austin. But there are actually a lot of electronics manufacturing facilities in Houston. Foxconn has a facility in Houston. And so it is possible that some or part of it could be assembled here. I don't know anything. I'm just speculating. But a lot of people don't know that there are a lot of manufacturing facilities here in Houston.
Interesting. So are we still struggling with Skype? Because this is like the old days. And by old days, I mean recent days.
Yeah, like last month.
Is this the person you were talking about?
No.
No. That's the one that said...
I thought that was different. Yeah, that is the... Yes.
Okay.
That is what clued me off and then set me on the path of figuring out what was going on.
All right. So what is the deal with Scott? I guess Flick has got his head down and he's trying to deal with it, so... Groovehouse is going to turn his own mic up and...
We're having internet issues, internet connectivity.
Yeah, the internet here has been really bad tonight. So
Pete's being told he's offline. I'm online. I'm going to shut my system down. Maybe it'll pick up his. We'll see what happens.
Well, while they all are working on that, why don't we take a call?
Okay.
And we'll address that, and then we'll come back and see if we can get an info shot out of Pete.
All right.
All right. So who do we have?
All right. Up first on the show, we are going to speak with Anne.
Anne, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Good evening.
I'm counting on you to give me the best advice on those new Intel processors I was reading about the other day.
What were you reading?
Well, they said that within a month or so, if you were going to buy a laptop or a computer, that you should hold off because they're going to have these new fabulous processors.
Are you a person who would benefit from a faster processor than what's out there right now?
Oh, that's what I want to know.
Well, I haven't been keeping up with what the latest things that are coming out. I mean, I imagine they're probably very, very good.
They're faster, but their primary benefit is that they are very good at power management. In fact, in some cases, you may get 50% better battery life in some of them.
So is that something that interests you and you're thinking about buying? Are you thinking about buying a laptop?
Well, I don't know. I'm on the fence between buying, I know, bucking the trend, a regular, you know, desktop or a laptop.
Well, what do you do with a computer?
Well, mainly I have a huge iTunes stash, and I do a small amount of film editing, short film editing.
If you do film editing, a desktop may be a good call.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, unless you need to be mobile. I mean, because when it comes to buying a new computer, deciding between a laptop and a desktop, you're going to pay more for the portability. You're going to get less computer for more money.
Right.
So unless you need that mobility, then you're going to get more bang for your buck if you buy a desktop.
And you can get a pretty good desktop with decent specs for a pretty good price. And you can, if you wanted to, if you felt up to it, you could even build your own. But that can be a little bit daunting. You won't save money doing that, but at least you can control the components.
Now, the flip side, too, of the faster Haswell chips coming out is that usually when Intel or someone releases a faster chip, that pushes all the other chips down. So today's fastest chips would now be kind of the sweet spot as far as, you know, value versus computing goes.
Right. If you're buying the latest high-end chips, you're going to pay a little bit more, at least initially. And then over time, those prices will come down a little bit.
Well, right. They were talking about it mainly in regards to laptops.
Right.
It's
that's the main benefit.
It's really supposed to improve laptops.
Right.
Yeah, but
it's a power saving.
It sounds to me like that the benefits come from them being better at power management, getting longer battery life, which, you know, is a good thing for a mobile device if you don't have access to AC power, that you have the ability to have a longer battery life.
So you really don't. If you're interested in a desktop, you probably there's no real reason to wait.
Okay, because I have, like, a kind of old computer right now, and I'm thinking, you know, it could, like, die on me any minute. So I'm going to take your advice, and I'm going to go shopping.
Well, the good thing about, you know, if these new computers, when they come out, they're always going to be priced at a premium anyway because it's new technology. The stuff that's out there right now, as the new stuff gets closer, that the stuff that exists now is going to go down in price. So it's probably a good time to buy.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's what they said, you know, in the next month or so, that the desktops will go down in price.
Yeah.
While everyone races after the latest thing. You know how that is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your advice. I love your show.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight.
Uh-huh.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. So
I see Flicted still over there ministering.
He's
to his notebook.
All right, well, let's go ahead and continue with the phone calls while he's working on that. Maybe Pete should be asked, I guess, I wonder if he's listening at all, if he could call in on the regular phone lines.
Yeah, is he on the chat room?
I don't know. Let me take a look and
see. Should we take the second call?
Someone in the studio, tell Flicked to try calling me again. When I call, I get the not available message. Internet is flaky in station. Can you call phone?
Call phone.
Phone.
Who is phone?
Phone.
So should we go and take this call?
Yes, let's take a call.
All right, then. Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
You know, this internet problem, it's them damn Chinese hackers. You know that, right?
Well, you know, there's just so many of our secrets being slurped into China via, from these hackers that it's saturating all of our bandwidth.
Look, I have a trivia question, all right? And it may sound strange, but for neophytes, it's probably interesting. I experienced the iPad the other day. I've been on a Dell desktop for years and years, about 8 years. And I had a little pipe accident, and I'm having my kitchen remodeled. And they sent the first crew out here with the fans and everything, and I had the sign on the iPad. And then they sent the insurance adjuster out, and she had an iPad. And they're showing off their device to me, you know, and I asked them to Google some things for me, and I was amazed. I'm going to buy an iPad this month. I can't believe this device. I mean, it was so incredible. But here's my trivia question. On my Google, and Google's my homepage, when it comes up, at the top of the screen is a bar for whatever I pull up that shows the number of hits for that particular request. So I asked them to pull up certain things.
Not again. Not again. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number caller. Was that him? Oh, yeah. All right.
It was a busy weekend hacking, though. Like it a lot, was. Yeah, a lot of you heard a lot of U.S. systems got beat up. They caught several Iranian groups actually trying to get into the systems. And the main difference between what has been going on the last 5 or 6 months with the Chinese is that when the Chinese actually come in, it's much more about espionage. They're after, you know, corporate secrets or after things like that. The stuff that the U.S. actually fessed up to having lost were things like, I think, blueprints for some of our big airplanes, I think some of our missile defense systems. And the Iranians are much more on a slash-and-burn campaign, where instead of, like, masking their presence and filtering off information, they're actually trying to gain information to be able to take systems down. And that's actually, it wasn't, you know, rumors on the internet. A lot of major news sites came out with that.
Mm.
So, one new thing. Everything else was same old, same old.
So you're just back in the country recently.
Yeah, I just got back in yesterday. Is that the day? Which day is today? Wednesday? Yeah, freshly back.
Freshly back. So when did you get back?
Monday afternoon.
Monday afternoon.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but I've had to work.
You sound surprisingly refreshed. So
yeah, I got
usually
a little
bit. Usually you stagger in here like, you know, right off the plane.
I came in on Monday, which, you know, it's, a lot of people had the same idea to come in on the holiday. So
you weren't here at the last show.
I was here.
Yeah, yeah. You were.
No, I was not. I got stuck at work. That was, yeah, that was Ethernet's birthday and my own birthday. And I wanted to do a birthday show, but at the same point, it was a fundraiser.
So would you have been doing something about the 10th anniversary of WordPress?
Yeah, I think I was going to mention that, and I had an Ethernet thing and a couple other things. I think that was on my radar. Yeah, because I didn't know it was at my place. But
the party was at Barrett's old house.
You leave the country and the kids just throw parties, you know?
That's right.
All right, 713-526-5738 as we still working on trying to get Peter Hughes.
I see Peter's face up on Flicted's computer. So
that's just his wallpaper.
let's see.
Someone's trying to call in. I wonder if that's probably not Pete.
It could be. Who knows? Could be that guy we hung up on. He's going to give us another run around with hits on
Google.
713-526-5738. We're struggling to get Pete back online. We're having some internet connectivity issues in the station, and it's affecting our ability to Skype with Pete, who is in San Antonio. And by the way, he is safe from the floods. I did check on that. He's outside of San Antonio on high ground, so he's not one of the people being swept away.
San Antonio is so hilly, their issues with flooding are more the flash flood type, where they have, you know, gullies essentially running between the hills. So,
All right.
Unlike here where it pools.
It just gathers. It gathers at the Beltway intersection.
That's right.
That's where we
get
all
those are our gullies.
All right. So 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we are taking calls. I guess they didn't want to be on the air, or we didn't want them to be on the air or something. All right. So I know that Flicted is still working on the Skype issue.
Furiously typing away.
Laser
focus. Is it purely internet connectivity?
I think it probably is purely internet connected, because I was doing a ping test. I was a Tracer T. Yes, my pings have been pretty steady here for a little while now.
Yeah, the piece doing a ping flood to make sure it really works, and there's it looks fine from here.
Yeah, saturated. All right, so Geek Gathering a week from Friday. Yeah, fundraiser. I want to, while we're waiting for a call or getting everything else together, I do want to take a moment and say thanks to everyone who called in during the last 3 weeks of fundraiser and helped us make our goal. We appreciate that very, very much. We had great success all 3 nights of the fundraiser, and that was thanks to our listeners who called in during the fundraiser and made that happen for us. So we want to say thanks. And if you made a commitment to pay but you didn't put up a credit card or something, you decided you were going to be reminded or invoiced or whatever, we hope that when you do get those, you'll actually make the payments. Fulfill your commitment to the radio station so that we can have a good return on the fundraiser. It's very nice to have a commitment that from our listeners that we're going to make the goal, but actually getting the money in the station and filling those coffers is the way to go. We want to make sure that that happens. All right, 713-526-5738. When you're calling in to speak to our phone screener, Groovehouse, don't tie his ear too much. Let him get you on hold and get you in line so he can start queuing up these calls for us to be on the air. And we're going to take that call. Go ahead and take line one.
Hey, Albert, you're on the air.
Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
I have a question. Vizio 2010.
Okay.
Microsoft has thought it about to put out on the market Vizio 2013. I have a product that I use that I need 2 more seats of Vizio 2010 for my employees, and I can't find any copies, and I want to buy legit copies. And I was wondering maybe you guys had an option without.
So what are you saying? You're saying you've got licenses for a couple of seats for Vizio 2010, but you don't have the install media?
Well, no, actually, I have. I need two licenses and the media to install for two more of my employees, so they can use the software that we use inside of Vizio.
And where have you tried to find that?
All the usual suspects: CDW, all the software places, and Microsoft.
Microsoft doesn't sell Vizio 2010 anymore, just 2013?
That's right. And interestingly, I can buy a 2013 in a multi-pack license, pay for 5, and I will have the, I can back up to 2010. They'll allow a backup to 2010 through that. But that's going to cost me, you know, that's 300 times 5, so... instead of my 300 times 2.
Well, I'm looking on Amazon, and I see Vizio Standard 2010 for sale for between $200 and $320.
And on Amazon, but I was worried about the legitimacy of those.
You can trust Amazon.
I understand his question, though, because the... the question becomes who's selling it, because this one's actually shipped and sold from a company called Market Warehouse.
Yeah.
So,
usually, though, I know with Amazon, though, if you're not satisfied, they will usually back you up with their sellers.
I wouldn't worry about buying from any of Amazon's affiliated sellers. I think that's pretty safe.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I did see those, and I got to wonder, well, you know, I just didn't want to buy any bootlegged or, you know, questionable. And so that would be a good source. I will try that tomorrow. And that was my question. I appreciate the show.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight.
All right.
All right. Bye. All right. 713-526-5738. Again, when calling in, talking to the screener, make sure that you're not dominating his time on the phone too much so he can get you put into the queue and put you on the air. What is the latest on the Skypel situation? I see Flickton's pushing dials.
Flickton even dropped out of.
Yeah, come back.
All right. Hey, Pete.
That was weird. It wasn't all on your end. When it cut out the first time, my Mac, this has never ever happened before, it basically, the screen went gray, and it came back to the login screen. I ended up rebooting before I could even try to call back again, and then basically you guys were having network issues on your end by the time it happened.
Iranian
Very
hackers.
Strange.
I don't know why we didn't think about this. Donovan on IRC said, and this is if the guy that just called about Visio 2010 still listening, and apparently LibreOffice can read Visio files. So that could be a free alternative form. Now, I don't know if it'll have all the stencils and if you can do all the same things you can on Microsoft Visio, but it is, it's a project, I guess, flowchart compliant kind of package that's out there for free.
All right. Well, why don't we do the Technology Bytes info shot, a day late, a dollar short.
If you're on hold, hang tight, and we'll be right back.
Yeah. All right. Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bytes info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay. Well, hopefully the Skype will hold out and last through the whole thing, or else, at the very least, if it goes all wonky, it'll sound like some kind of techno kind of cool thing, and we can put a beat to it and it'll go viral. In interesting news on the PC front, fortunately we're not PC Bytes or computer Bytes, we're Technology Bytes. That was on purpose, but the PC industry, they're really looking at the concept that perhaps the peak for PCs has passed. That the sales for personal compute for the computers is actually going to be declining. The first quarter of this year, they were down 14%, according to IDC, and it's the biggest decline since the research firm began tracking PC sales in 1994. They say it's no fluke. IDC is now forecasting 2013 to be the second year in a row that overall PC sales will decline by about 8%. Now, in 2012, it went down 4%. So you're talking about the number of total sales going down at a larger rate. So the of course, everybody's running around, the PC is doomed. Oh, it's going to take a while. In the place of the notebook in particular is where there's an issue where the tablet, which for the first time since Apple or Microsoft, if you're a stickler for these things, launched those devices to the masses, the tablet will overcome notebooks this year. IDC pegs the number of tablets that will ship in 2013 at just over 229 million, which compares to the 201 million portable PCs the firm expects to see shipped this year. By 2015, IDC forecasts that tablets will outpace the entire PC market, portables and desktops combined, so somewhat north of 330 million machines shipped. Program manager for IDC's mobility tracker said what started as a sign of tough economic times has quickly shifted to a change in the global computing paradigm as mobile, with mobile being the primary benefactor. So, the Wired, an article I found on Wired.com says, does this mean you should be worried, really worried if you're Hewlett Packard, Dell, or Intel? Apparently, what Wired's conclusion is that the decline of the PC is no different than the sun setting on mainframe computers when the microcomputer came along, or the end of the microcomputer when the PC ate its lunch. Some companies, in that transition, like Burroughs and Univac, DEC and Wang, failed to make the jump. But on the day that the death of the PC was all but declared, Hewlett-Packard's stock price went up and Intel was up and Dell stayed the same, which means Wall Street doesn't think that that's what's going to happen. HP and Dell don't get much credit from Wall Street for their PC business anyways. It's all about software and services in the cloud. Intel is running as fast as it can toward mobile, as is AMD and Microsoft. So all the companies mentioned have suffered mightily from their longstanding attachment to the PC. There's plenty of work to be done if they're going to keep or regain their former stature, but they're already going to where computing is heading, according to Wired. The only pure play PC companies left, like Acer, Asus, and Lenovo, are either playing the commodity game or hiring software engineers as fast as they can to get into other parts of the food chain. There's just an interesting the tablet thing. There's a graph. if you imagine two bars that stay about level, that's the portable PC and the total PC, portable and desktop, going across from 2010 to 2017 in the chart. And if you go to almost zero in the corner on the graph and then go up at about, not a 45 degree angle, but almost a 45 degree angle up the across the thing, that's what tablets are doing as far as their numbers, while the PC and the portables are staying flat. So that'll be interesting. You wonder, you know, the thing to start thinking about is, you know, how is this going to change business, and how is this going to change how that works? Are companies going to continue to keep putting people on desktop computers or laptops, or are there going to be businesses that are going to embrace it and go majority tablet? Should be interesting to watch, and we're here. We'll still be here to help you when your tablet doesn't work, or your Google Glass, or your brain implant, or whatever. So we're not worried, but I would think you'd want to be paying attention if you're working heavily in the PC business. And here's a return. Now everything old is new again. The start button is going to come back to Windows 8.1. Says the return of the start button is in the Windows 8.1 update, and it gives you a full screen menu. There were lots of complaints from users about its disappearance, apparently, so now it's coming back. The free Windows Blue add-on will include a start button on the taskbar, just like the previous versions in the operating system, but it will not apparently load a pop-up list of programs and folders like it did before. According to ZDNet and Windows Supersite, the start button will have a stylized appearance, making it look like a miniature version of the Windows 8 logo. By clicking it, users will be presented with the same screen as if they would go into the Windows 8 start menu, but this can be altered to display the All Apps version of the same menu instead. So you can arrange the icons, and it will still be a full screen item rather than just in the corner or in a window. It's been claimed by the report that users can choose to boot directly to the desktop rather than going to the Windows 8 start screen by default. Users will also be allowed to set the background of the start menu to be the same as the desktop itself if you want. Employees of Microsoft explained the decision to remove the button in a blog post last year. It was found that users would pin applications to the taskbar for quicker access to the apps, and in turn dropping the number of instances where they would use the start menu. But apparently people didn't go along with that. They wanted their start button, and they're getting it back. And then this is on kind of new stuff. Here's one that's going to happen, and then one that I think is not going to happen on new stuff. It's not a brand new announcement of stuff. This one's a brand new announcement of stuff, but the last thing won't be, so a little out of the ordinary. Motorola has largely been coy about what its next major smartphone will be. You know, Google bought them. But at D11, the firm's Dennis Woodside of Motorola announced that the new flagship phone will be called Moto X, which it had been rumored as the X phone, and that it would be built in Fort Worth, Texas. Yeah, in a Fort Worth, Texas factory that was once used to make Nokia phones. There's a sign of times changing. There aren't many details at this stage. He did say the smartphone will, quote, know what you want to do before you do. So that's interesting. The other things, I guess, about it is the Moto X will be broadly distributed across numerous carriers, which has been a rarity for Motorola smartphones in recent years. What are the other things? On the issue of battery life, he said that he'll save the details for later, but the industry issue of battery life is a huge problem. There are two processors in the device to create a system that allows you to make it work. So I guess that means battery life might be an issue for them. And let's see. Motorola mentioned a shift towards stock Android coming later this year. So it's not certain if, the Moto X will embrace that philosophy or not. So we'll keep an eye on that one. And then this one I would file under the somebody kind of figuring out what's a rumor that would get reported all around and is not true. but that would get around all the time, you know, that would get around all the internet and people would talk about it. Yes, I'm talking about it, but I want to point out that this is probably garbage. The rumor per Wayphone and Unwired View is that Apple is planning to increase the resolution of the next generation iPhone to double the pixel count on the iPhone 5. In other words, double the Retina display. The details come from a report which claims that the next generation Retina display will be featured on Apple's next generation handset, whatever it ends up being called, the iPhone 5S or the iPhone 6 or whatever. The report claimed the next iPhone will continue to have the same 4-inch display as the iPhone 5. In addition, the report claimed the iPhone 5 will have a thinner bezel than its current design, picking up design elements from the iPad mini, and it was claimed that Apple's next iPhone will begin shipping in September. Just for reference here, the current iPhone has a pixel count of nearly 730,000 pixels. Its screen resolution is 1136 by 640, which works out to 326 pixels per inch on the 4-inch display. The Retina display branding came out with the iPhone 4. Let's see, wait, blah, blah, blah. At the time, the Retina display was a market-leading feature, but since then, devices like the HTC One with a 468 pixel per inch display have provided intense competition. HTC One crams a 1080p resolution screen, the equivalent of a full-fledged high-res television, into a 4.7 inch space. That's more than 2 million pixels, putting it at a density substantially higher than the iPhone 5. I don't see them doubling it, first of all, just from is it useful, and second, why just one release after they really got the screen into the iPhone 5 would they make that change? So color me doubtful on that. Now maybe we'll find out I'm wrong. And if we do, you'll hear it here on the Info Shot. And that's the news.
All right.
The late news.
Yeah, well, we finally got it. I guess things sorted out.
Completely sorted out.
Seems to be. The sound quality coming to me sounds really good.
Well,
that's the best measure I have of what's going on.
Not through any fault of ours. This internet here has been, at least it kind of seems to have stabilized. I wonder if he rebooted. Did he reboot the router or something silly like that?
I think he went to wired. A wired connection is one thing.
Yeah. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We've got two calls in the queue, but plenty of open lines. And Groovehouse is just anxious. My headphones are cutting out, so I get this weird only in one ear thing for a while, and then it comes back.
Jiggle the handle.
Flush Pete right down the toilet if I do that. All right.
Aww. Okay.
Well, I'm going to try some different headphones. Maybe that would work. I'm going to try these. All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Good.
I've got a MacBook Pro that it's a new one, a relatively new, and I replaced the super drive with a solid-state drive. And you get that little kit, and you can take out the DVD drive and put in a solid-state drive. And I had Boot Camp running on my OS 10 hard drive, but what I wanted to do was install Windows 7 on that solid state drive, on its own drive. In other words, take it off the OS drive and put it on drive 2. And I'm having a heck of a time with Boot Camp. I'm going through everything and following the Boot Camp commands and stuff, and I get to the point where it reboots, and I'm trying to do it through a flash drive, a USB drive, which it allows you to do. And when everything's done and it restarts, and then I get a black screen saying, not a bootable, no bootable drive found, insert a bootable drive and hit any key. So it's not booting off the thumb drive.
So I'm confused. You're trying to get it to boot from a thumb drive in order to do the install?
Correct.
So, and that's where you're getting tripped up?
Correct.
Have you tried putting an image on the hard drive, a Windows and ISO image, and...
I've got that, but this is Boot Camp 5, and it's a lot different than the Bootcamp 3 and 4 that I've used to. I've done this, you know, half a dozen times on a Mac Tower.
Right.
No problem. But when I, and it usually says, hey, you know, point the ISO, and then normally I have the ISO or an install disk on the super drive,
mm-hmm.
which is, in the past, has been on the inside the laptop. But now my super drive is external, and I've tried off of that, too. It's, when I got the hard drive, the solid-state drive, I got a kit that you can remove
right, right.
the super drive, put
right.
it in a little USB enclosure, and it'll work off the USB enclosure.
And in just in doing a quick Google search, I see other people having the same issue.
Yeah, I've been looking at that, too.
And I don't necessarily see a foolproof fix for that. I have not installed Bootcamp in a while, just because I prefer to use virtualization. Is there some reason in particular that you need to have it native?
Yeah, because of some of the software we run. I work for a software company,
uh-huh.
and we've got a product that it's a Windows-based product. I happen to use Macs and like Macs,
right.
and I display and teach on the Mac side. I teach what our tool can do to a Mac.
Right.
So I like to have it fully installed. I mean, I've had it Bootcamp partition on the OS drive
uh-huh.
With no problem. But I just thought I'd get enhanced Windows by having it on the solid state drive.
And you definitely would. I mean, it'll be night and day, as good as that will be. As I say, I don't necessarily see a solution in these things. Just scanning, like I'm looking on Apple support forums,
right?
And I don't see a solution there for doing it. It looks like Bootcamp may not support that.
Well, may not. Yeah, that's what's confusing me. Again, like I said, I've done it on a Mac Tower many times, but I don't know if it's.
Have you done it to an SSD?
Well, no, not to an SSD, but to a.
Because all the problems I'm seeing here are with an SSD.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that may be your issue. Well, you know what you might try doing is try installing it as a Parallels instance.
Right.
And see what that does with your software. One of the things, and put it on the SSD, one of the things about the SSD is that all the components that are required to run essentially in memory. So it's super fast. The Windows swap file, the Windows virtual drive all run on there, and it's just really fast. And you might find you don't need necessarily the natives.
All right. Well, yeah, I've got Fusion. I like Fusion better than Parallels, but I'll give that.
So, and certainly, you know, if it doesn't work, you just blow it away. And you know.
Right, because I've got I've got various Windows versions in VMware.
Mm-hmm.
But that's running on the OS on the OS 10 side.
Yeah, try. In fact, what you probably can do is just put the virtual drive, the virtual machine, over on the SSD.
Right.
And you could still run Fusion off of the OS drive.
Right.
Just to try it out.
Okay. Well, I'll give that a go. You guys have always been good, and I really appreciate everybody's help.
All right. We appreciate your call.
Uh huh. Bye bye.
All right. Dwight, to answer your question, I finally found somebody who can speak intelligently about the Fusion Drive for the Apple.
Ah.
And the way that the Apple does their Fusion Drive is that it's actually a 1 terabyte, on the 1 terabyte Fusion Drive, it's a 1 terabyte drive with a 128 gig.
So it's actually like 1.128.
Right. So, but they don't sacrifice you. That's like you're not like you're getting a 750 gig hard drive
right,
and a 256
right.
flash. I mean, it's a its own dedicated bit of flash there. I guess
it's kind of essentially like the hybrid hard drives that you could get, but with a huge amount of flash RAM.
Right. So but even if you were to buy their 3 terabyte model, it's just 128
right.
gig. The Fusion Drive is just 128 gig. They haven't taken.
And everything will live on that 128 until.
Yeah, the OS will fit on there fine.
Right.
Just
and
fine.
Then it'll start swapping it out intelligently.
Right. And you can actually, apparently, you can tell it where, what you want to use, where you want it to use it, and tells you where it's stored.
Allocate the space for preferences.
But, yeah.
That's pretty neat. I'm going to be curious to see what you think of it coming in after the weekend next show.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious. That's one of the considerations when buying a new computer these days. It's like, I'm going to have this really great computer on my desk in my home office. But because like you put the you can almost put the new 27-inch iMac under your arm and tote it somewhere. But.
It's they're relatively light.
Yes.
It'll be lighter than your 24-inch, but it still is not.
No, it's not portable.
You'd bring it out to the geek gathering. Although at that price point, I'd want velvet ropes and you know like a no bearing zone.
HP is selling a 20-inch desktop that they're touting as a portable. You could essentially pick it up and use it as a tablet. As a 20-inch desktop.
Yes. Yup. Nice. All right. 713-526-573. Although we are getting close to the top of the hour, now that we're not in fundraiser anymore, we have to be sensitive to the breaks.
To the clock. Obey the clock.
So I don't know that we have enough time to grab a call or not, and whoever's calling in right now is dominating Groovehouse's time.
The first one may just have quick advice.
All right, let's take line one, real quick. And
hey, Robert, you're on the air?
Yes. Okay, I was given a gift of a 1 terabyte Western Digital passport.
Yeah?
And it's a slow-motion failure. I'm watching it go out.
Okay.
I have a lot of information on this this hard drive. I seem to have brought it back from the dead, and this makes the 6 or 7 times that I've brought it back. I'd like some advice on a new portable hard drive that would be a little bit more reliable than this piece of... yes.
Well, I don't... You know, it sounds like... How old is the drive?
4 or 5 months.
That's under warranty.
It should be under warranty, but you still want to get your data off there immediately if you think you're having issues with it.
I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, the HP, I've read mixed reviews on the HP portable drives.
I think you said it's Western Digital Passport.
I mean, I'm sorry, the Western Digital Passport, or my apologies, the Western Digital Passport, I've got one, and it does tend to be a little on the flaky side. And it's not the drive itself that's going bad. It's the electronic enclosure that's giving me the grief. It may be, and I don't know if that's what's happening with yours or not. But I can't remember who the other, I know that there's Western Digital makes them. Come on, give me some other hard drive names.
Seagate
right. makes them. And I've had all brands go out on me.
Okay.
So what I tend to do with my external portable hard drives is I buy the ones that are RAID that have 2 drives in them.
Okay.
So that I have 2 copies of my data at all time in case one of the drives fails. So I have a backup copy. But other than that, telling you which one to go get, I don't have a recommendation.
Should we hold the suspense until after the break since we're coming up on the...
Yeah, look, if you don't mind holding, we can talk to you a little bit more about it after the break. Or not.
He's on hold.
Okay.
I did not hang up.
Okay, good. All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites. We've got to take a short break. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after this.
Go tell it on the mountain. Go talk it to the seashore. Whisper it in the breeze. Say it wherever you please. But it's a secret that needs to get out. So tell a friend that you heard it on KPFT. It's a secret that should be shouted out. From the highest overpass to the bends in the bayou, you heard it on KPFT. If it's worth hearing, if it's worth discussing, KPFT gets the word out. So tell a friend to turn on, tune in, and listen to radio for your mind. Call 713-526-5738 to sign up a friend today. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston. Listener-sponsored radio for peace.
Did you know
you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, you're listening to 9.1 FM KPFT Houston. Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. If you're tired of hanging with all the Windows users here in Houston, pack your bags and set your sights on Austin for the Texas Linux Fest happening this weekend at the AT&T Conference Center in Austin, Texas. Running Friday, May 31st and June 1st, the festival is rife with talks, vendors, and a list of large sponsors. Some of the talks included during the two-day con are Your Baby Can Hack by Jen Greenway, though I hear that her alternate speaker, Sir Mix-a-Lot, will be standing by with the talk titled Baby Got Hack. And I can't deny that that last part was completely made up. If you're into pets, there's the proper care and feeding of a MySQL database, especially because a lot of them are getting up there in age. And if you have your eyes set on a new puppy or kitten, there's an introduction to the Cassandra database on Linux by Nick Bailey. Ron Sparks will have a how-to on the first Wi-Fi from the edge of space, although either he's already done it and no one else can be the first, or he lacks the practical experience in the subject matter. You'll have to attend to find out. And continuing with the idea of being first, Owen DeLong will be giving a talk called IPv6, It's Easy on Linux. That's cool on two counts. First, Owen works for Hurricane Electric, which handed out some of the first blocks of IPv6 addresses for public consumption. I remember requesting some obscenely large amount and actually getting them. And second, IPv6 is native in almost every modern Linux distribution out there. It really is that easy, so why not jump into the sea of IPv6 and see what Mr. DeLong has to say. And in the spirit of things that seem to take forever to happen, Leo Reeder will be delivering a talk titled Making Virtual Desktops a Reality for Linux. The debate as to whether Linux is ready for the plain old desktop is still raging on, and he wants to bring virtual desktops into the mix at a Linux convention. Brave man. And even for the even braver, there's profiling Perl memory use with Devel SizeMe. Tim Bunce will be your speaker for that one. So if you know what that means, you probably don't need to attend. And though the award for the bravest soul definitely goes to the person willing to give a talk on a new Linux file system, that person would be Chandra Seetharaman for this talk on what is cool about BTRFS. So you know how to pronounce that. I think it's pronounced ButterFS, not to be confused with Butterface. So it was like I was going to install Ubuntu, ButterFS. sorry. Although we may actually have to share that award with Amy Cannon and her talk on OrangeFS, which is the Orange file system for big data, and the Amazon Cloud. So you hear that, Chandra? Amy says your data isn't big enough.
Any relation?
I don't. No. She's two N's. Three N's cumulatively in the last name. So I hope I'm not coming across as cross. If I'm in a biting mood for this Barrett time, it's only because I can't make it to Austin this weekend. I also just read the description of James Wickett's talk on Be Mean to Your Code Gauntlets. No, hold on. That's Be Mean to Your Code with Gauntlets. Actually, that's Gauntlet, Gaunt-LT. So maybe not the same thing. I'm usually a proponent of code rights, not coders' rights, because they don't really have any. But I think that James has a point here. Spare the rod and spoil the child processes. Though the real meaning of the festival is probably Russell Pavlicek with this talk entitled How to Almost Kill a Successful Project and Bring It Back to Life. Lessons Learned from the Zen Project. Okay, so he didn't actually kill the project, but coming close has to count for something. In any case, don't be like me. If you've got the time and transportation, head to the hills while the rest of us surf to 2013.texaslinuxfest.org for our fill of Linux festivities. The one thing that'll definitely cheer me up, though, is the Geek Gathering happening this Friday. First Friday after the first Tuesday. Okay, so the Geek Gathering isn't happening till next Friday, so, man, I'm upset again. All right.
That's because this Friday's still May.
Yeah, well, that's it for the Linux Festivus for the rest of us, and that's that for Barrett Time. All delivered via email in a Nexus 7. I don't know if that was actually going to work.
Yeah, Barrett didn't bring a
No laptop.
All right, well, do we still have the call on hold? No.
It looks like he hung up.
He said, like, to heck with you, I'm going to go buy a hard drive or something. All right.
Might be calling now.
Oh, it might be him calling again.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, which you are.
You know,
welcome back to the show. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight. And he's
Groovehouse.
Do you feel like you have some power to be able to just start that round whenever you want? Like we're your puppets?
You know,
we are your minions.
Resistance is futile.
You're the lamest group of minions I can imagine.
Oh, wow.
No, I would get all sensitive and say something meaningful and from the heart if I wasn't afraid of the reaction that you guys are giving. But I will just say that it is a privilege to be on the air with all of you. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop, see? You're just not buying it. You know, growing up, I had a very difficult time with this concept called sharing. And yet, I have all of you in here. I mean, this isn't even my show anymore.
Yes, it is.
No,
it's,
I mean,
Jay Show. It's always been the Jay Show.
Well, Groovehouse, you're going to be co-owner of what this show is going to be. Come,
yeah,
which is going to be the Brody Happy Hour.
Oh no!
It's going to be Rainbow Happy Fun Time with Groovehouse and his Brody crew.
Hoof bump.
Hoof bump. Oh. Now sad trombone.
Now sad trombone. So if you don't know what a Brody is, just Google that. I think it's relatively safe to Google that. Let me make sure that it's safe. Too late. People are B-R-O-N-E-Y, like pony with a B.
There's no E.
There's no? Okay.
Just Y.
B-R-O-N-Y.
Afflicted knows.
Urban Dictionary disagrees.
Oh.
No, there's no E in it.
Multiple spellings.
No. It is B-R-O-N-E-Y.
No.
Well, I think... It says, did you mean Brody? Let's see what happens there.
My Baroni both, has a first name.
Both work. Both seem to work.
See which one returns more Google results.
They fluctuate. Why
does Google say that?
Hold the phone.
There were 4 million before, and now there's only 1,000.
We just lost 2,000 bronies. Okay, that actually might not be a
I will say
thing.
That B-R-O-N-Y returns safer image searches than B-R-O-N-E-Y. But,
Oh, and now the bronies are crawling.
There's a guy that looks just like Groovehouse, only he's got a pink wig on.
No. Oh, man, what did we do? What did we start?
Brody Senor.
It's still James.
OMG.
Bronior.
I guess you can say whatever you want on your show.
Oh, I'm making you a full partner in the super happy rainbow fun time Brody hour.
O-O-L partner. That's what you're making me.
I think we should crop Groovehouse out of the Jesus Monkey car and just fill it with, like, bronies.
Yeah.
Right. Or My Little Ponies.
Bronymobile. We're going to...
The Bronymobile.
We're going to put little hoofs on Barrett's handlebars on his motorcycle so that when he's cruising down the
truce.
Road...
Truce.
Yeah, looks like hoofs.
You put him off, off the front axle.
Okay.
And put him... You know, on sticks of the thing, and so then it looks like it's running.
Prancing.
Yes.
Prance cycle.
We're gonna get him a helmet with a brony tail on it.
And Flick is gonna have a Brody Davidson. A My Little Harley.
My Little Harley. Oh, that's precious.
So can I ask a computer help question?
Are you kidding? Yes, Brody Dwight.
So brothers. I have the new
Brody brother.
Redesigned Google Maps, which I kind of don't like. And one of the things I can't... Anybody here have it and been using it?
No. I know where I am and where I'm going.
I'm trying to get... You know how the Google Maps will give you a link or a short link?
Yeah, so that you can share a link to whatever you're looking at?
I can't figure out how to do that in this
That's on the website.
World.
Are you using Chrome?
Yes. And so here's the location.
Uh-huh.
And there's no...
There's not a share link?
No. Let's see what's here. Oh, no. Return to classic. There's my help.
Go back to classic. Go back to classic.
Thank you.
Going back to classic is your answer?
Yeah, for now.
Retreat.
Retreat.
And then to tie this back to bronies, caring is sharing.
So the reason I wanted to do that was I have found the location, which is up in kind of northwest Houston. It's off the Beltway, south of 240, between 249 and 290 of the Foxconn assembly plants. And there actually it's a pretty big operation up there. So
are they employing, do they have like the same kind of conditions as they do in their Chinese factories?
I don't see it in the jungle. I don't see it in the suicide nets on the side of the buildings. But they're there. And so I
the suicide nets?
No.
I don't. The sentence you just said is I don't see the suicide nets on the thing, but they're there.
No.
HP bought all those. They moved them over to Compaq, yeah. Old Compaq headquarters.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like this. If I wasn't on vacation, and in 290 on Beltway 8, so the northwest corner of the Sam Houston.
So that the old Compaq area?
No, it's south of there.
It's Value Village.
Wasn't there like a Texas Instruments plant out around
Texas
in there? Was that further out 290?
That's further out. This is a different thing. And this all looks very new. This is really interesting. So anyway, I'm wondering if Apple wouldn't do all or part of its system here. I know when I was covering tech as a beat, and I forget the name of the company, but there was a really big contract electronics manufacturing plant in, I think it was more in South Houston, that would do a lot of chassis and wire assemblies for electronics. But I can't remember the name of that company. I don't know that they're there anymore. But this thing with Foxconn is really intriguing.
So it's looking more like Apple may build.
Well, I'm just seeing this big facility with a company they know and work with all the time. And Tim Cook has said they're going to build a Mac in the United States, and it'll be done in Texas. They're also working on a large. They're expanding their campus that they already have in Austin. And they have a big facility there, but whether it will have manufacturing, I don't know. I think most of what they have in Austin is help desk. I think a lot of their AppleCare stuff.
So is there going to be a Chinese news crew coming in to report on the deplorable working conditions?
Yes, exactly.
And the mistreated American workers?
Working conditions are too nice. It cannot stand.
All right.
So I was going to say, you talked about IPv6. You said you had a blocker. Do you have it deployed at all?
I don't know if it's still out there because I had a big block from Hurricane Electric, and then I was on the six bone for a while, which did four
six
on six.
Bone.
Yeah, it was called the like the numeral six. It was kind of cool. And then BONE.net, and then I also did four on six. So the main thing back then is what not many people had IPv6 nodes that connected. So what this let it do is you could actually pass IPv6 traffic over onto IPv4, pass it around, and then bounce out the node you have. But yeah, I've still got address space, and then all for our work stuff, we maintain IPv6 address space and do some of our routing. So
my employers had an IPv6 block for a pretty long time, but never did anything with it. So actually, I just recently started pushing out the reverse ARPA zone for it, but we're not really using it at this point.
Yeah, I think I've forgotten. Like, I was really well versed in it there for a while, and we got all ready, and you know, the wireless group was into it, and we were all doing it, and then it just never really took off. I mean, it's been 10 years. It's been 13 years since, yeah, we were started messing with it. So someday it'll come out for real.
We're routing IPv6 at work. Yay. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, IPv6 or IPv4, we don't care.
You know, they wanted to call IPv6 IPNG.
That was one, Next generation?
That was one of the names originally that people were bouncing around at the time, which tells you what the time period was when that was actually being put out as a standard.
It's a lot better than the IP Deep Space 9. Or IP Voyager, which really sucked. All right. See, nerds. All right.
Geeky nerds.
Brony Groovehouse.
No!
Oh, fist bump. Come on.
Hoof.
a bump.
Come on, if you're going to do it.
I got corrected on my bronyism by Groomhouse.
I only learned it from Flicked, so.
I learned it by watching you, Dad.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't learn it. You caught it. You caught it from Flicked. He's the one that infected. He's the infection vector for bronyism.
I'm going home and taking a shower.
Patient zero.
Patient.
He is Brony patient. Zero.
Brony zero. He spells Brony with a zero.
He's zero in mind.
He's elite.
Oh, I found a new screen name for Flicked. That's awesome. Or somebody. Someone should take that. Wow. Groovehouse, I guess, should get it.
Give it to Dwight. He's awfully quiet right now.
Oh, but his tail's flapping with joy. He's swatting flies.
He's got his head in a feed bag.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
We love you. Who is next?
All right, up next. We love you, TJ. Up next, it's Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I love your show, and I especially like it when you guys are laughing your heads off. It really lightens up my week. I've listened to you for a long time.
Well, thanks. We have a good time doing it.
Yeah, and it's fun to listen to. I don't catch everything you're talking about. But,
well, that's probably for the best.
Yeah,
I think so.
All right, so what can we do for you tonight?
My question is, I'm using an HP laptop, and it's getting better, but about a month ago I started to have some distorted text, most noticeable in emails and sometimes on web pages. And I don't have any problem with any graphics or photographs.
So it's just the text?
What do you mean by distorted?
By distorted, I mean it's like if you got a really bad Xerox or something, but each letter, and not the whole page, just part of the page, and especially near the top, the letters will be like, it's almost as if part of the letter is missing.
So it's as though if you had a dot matrix printer, some of the dots don't print.
Yeah, it's like that.
And it's specific just to the letter itself. It's not like half a letter. It's not like a range. It'll be this letter either has it or it doesn't have it.
It's almost like it's a variable amount of the text message or the email message in text. A variable part of that will have that not all there look in a text.
So you said it was up in a specific part of the screen?
It seems like I notice it more, like if I'm looking at email, it's more in the center part of the screen and not the whole page.
So if you scroll the text that looks bad down away from that, does it look better then?
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes if I just refresh the page, it all looks great, and then a second later, it's almost like
Is it all internet or web browser based that you're seeing this? Like if you were to bring up a
no, you know what? It happened on Word documents too.
Honestly, but my guess would be that the video connector is damaged a little bit.
Oh yeah,
not quite good, and so you're getting some lines of data coming from the computer to the monitor is getting messed up.
Yeah, the fact that it doesn't move with the text makes me think, yeah, it's physical and not in the OS.
Is this a notebook or a desktop?
It's a notebook.
Does it have an external monitor connection?
They all do, pretty much.
No, it does not?
Does not?
No, it doesn't, but I think I was thinking that previously and forgot that I was thinking it might have to do with a video card.
Well, if it has an external monitor connection, you can take it and connect a desktop monitor to it, and if the text looks completely fine, then it's more than likely your display.
Oh, okay.
The screen itself.
How old is the laptop?
The laptop's only going to be 3 years old this summer, it's still under warranty.
It is.
Yeah.
I would call HP and describe to them the problem that you're having if you still have a warranty from them. Is it a warranty through HP or is it through, like, Best Buy or something?
I got it through Micro Center.
Okay, they got the warranty through Micro Center as well?
Yeah, I got the machine and the...
Well, what I'm asking is, I know that you can buy a warranty, like when you buy
an extended warranty. Yeah. Did you pay extra for that?
But the extent,
I paid extra.
But is it through the Micro Center or is it through HP? I mean, I know you bought it at Micro Center, but is it considered to be the HP warranty, or is this the extended warranty like a Best Buy or Micro Center will sell?
Well, you know, I didn't go that far with this to check it out.
Okay.
On the warranty.
Micro Center has really good service. And you can walk in there with it, and if they're under, in fact, even if it's not under warranty, they'll look at it for you. They're really good about that.
Well, hey, I just wanted an excuse to call you guys.
Well, we're glad.
I've never called the show before.
No, it's great that you called, and we're glad, but we want you also to have a good working computer.
Yeah, right.
And if it's under warranty, then
I can try the external monitor, and then when I get a chance, because I won't be able to do it just right away, just head over there and get the free help.
Yeah, head over there as soon as you can, especially because it's under warranty, and a lot of times they'll replace it if they can't fix it, especially since it's a notebook and it's portable. It's not that hard to take over, and then chances are, instead of fixing it, it might be cheaper for them just to give you something a little bit newer.
Yeah, I mean, especially if this does turn out to be a hardware issue, you want to get it addressed because, well, it's under warranty, so you don't have to pay to replace that display.
Okay, good idea. And what's weird is it's gotten better over the last month, and I had unexpectedly to be out of town, and it's just gotten a little bit better, but it sounds like I should might get better before it gets worse.
Right. Well, a laptop, too, because of the bend in the, you know, when you bend the display to close up the laptop and you open it again, it pulls those cables, sometimes will loosen and tighten if there's a little bit of a, if there's a short in there, so it might be great for a while. And then you just, like, adjust the screen a slight bit, and then it has the problem.
Yeah, does it come on, like, after the machine's been on for a while, or does it come and go, or is it just always
kind of
there?
It comes and goes, and, you know, I never even thought about it having anything to do with opening it up. But it does kind of come and go, and sometimes it's worse, and sometimes it's better. So it's very variable.
My guess would be it's something physical, like probably the cable ribbon that goes between the laptop and up to the monitor. It's either gotten bent too much or something's
about to break and you're going to lose it altogether. So yeah, check if you've got the paperwork, if you've got, you know, like the verification email, see when the last date of your warranty is, because you don't want to walk up there like the day after it expired. You want to hit that date if you can.
Right. And why were you asking if it was through HP or Micro Center? What's the difference?
Well, because if it's through Micro Center, then they're going to fix it there. If it's through HP, you call HP and you arrange service.
Oh, okay.
But start with Micro Center, because I think that's going to be
They're real good about that.
Yeah, they helped me out with my desktop one. Okay. All right, thanks a lot, you guys.
All right, thanks for your call. Have a good night.
All right, thanks. Bye.
All right.
I have to make a sad confession that during our previous brony conversation, I accidentally had Peter Pie turned down, so he wasn't able to make any of his, you know, witty comments.
Peter Pie?
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
So now you've got them all stored up. You can just...
Let loose.
Yeah, let them go.
Nay, I say. All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next by length of...
Oh!
Put some peanut butter on his lips. See, Phil, no, that's how you should get Mr. Ed to talk, right?
Just give me an apple.
That wasn't a brony episode.
I'm not sure what...
Wait a minute.
I don't really know what that was, but that, maybe that's what they told you. I don't...
that's
a different era.
I don't know, Wilbur.
That's a different era in horse.
In talking horses.
Talking horses.
There will be no peanut butter at the next geek gathering. Crew House.
Yes.
What's up?
What's up?
Who's
What's going
next?
On?
How's, hey, how are you? Hi.
I'm good. Everything's
I'm
good.
I'm glad you're here.
On this side of the glass.
Yeah. All right. You still a baby for the geek gathering?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a baby.
All right, who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. I'm having some issues with my Comcast cable.
Me too.
Yes. I can't get through to them at all, hardly. When I do reach someone, I get someone in my family. They're in China, and they can't hear me. And my issue is not so much with the internet part of it, but it's the video part of it. My the cable TV, my program guide doesn't seem like it's updating after a couple of days. You go there, and everything says to be announced.
Yeah.
there are a few of those that are listed, but for the most part, they're blank, and I tried to reset the box, and that helped
right.
a little bit.
Let me stop you right there. I don't have a fix for you for this. Okay. It sounds to me like you've got a physical problem with your Comcast service. You need to call Comcast, and you need to have them schedule a service to come out and have a look at it. You may have a degraded signal. So it sounds like is you might have a degraded signal, which is causing you not to be able to scrape the program list, or you're not getting good video. I know it's tough to deal with them. Sometimes getting somebody from Comcast, but if you get somebody on the phone, do you have your phone service through them as well?
Yes.
Do you have a cell phone?
Yes.
Why don't you call them on the cell phone? Because whatever, if you can't hear them on the phone and you're having problems with your video, you're having a delivery problem from the service you're getting from Comcast.
Actually, they're claiming they can't hear me when I finally get to the customer service.
That's fine, and it's probably true. But if you have a degraded signal on your overall Comcast signal, that's going to be affecting your voice. It's going to be affecting your video. It might even be affecting your internet to some extent. So maybe call them on a cell phone so they can hear. So I called Comcast this week because I'm having some connectivity issues with my internet, and I got on my cell phone. I called him up. I got through to a technician. He was probably in India or something. He didn't speak. You could definitely tell he had an accent. You could tell his first level tech support. He was like wanting me to reboot this, reboot that. So yeah, I've done that a million times. Whatever. I said I need to have a technician come out and look at this. And so they scheduled a technician. He's coming out tomorrow morning, and hopefully they're going to resolve that. Maybe a new box. Maybe you just need a new box. Maybe they need to check your signal strength. I know that like a year ago, the Comcast that came into my house from whatever the box is in the neighborhood, that box had problem. They had to have a technician go out there and do some rewiring on that box. But there's nothing I can do to help you except really encourage you to call Comcast and make them make this right. And are you on Twitter?
No.
That's too bad, because Comcast Cares is really responsive online. If you start complaining loud enough on Twitter, the Comcast people will respond to that. But I would say, call them up, and if you can't get them to satisfy or can't get it to work, then consider going with somebody else, like AT&T U-verse or something.
Okay.
I wish I had a fix. I wish I could say, that's Comcast problem. They can't hear you. They're not giving you good support. Here's what you do. The only solution is to get them to fix it.
Yeah, we've been recommending for the city that they do the Jay Lee maneuver and install a different cable provider on top of the current one. But
no! Hey,
they aren't listening.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you, Ben.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, that's just, there's not, I mean, if you're not getting good service from your cable provider, they're the only ones that can fix it. It's not like a do-it-yourself. Except for one possibility, if you really don't want to deal with them, you can take all of your equipment, take your whatever box they have at your house, your modem, the set-top box, all that, and go to the Comcast store and have them replace it. They'll replace it free, and they'll give you new stuff, and you go home, and you hook it up, and maybe that'll help. But rather than do that and go out there and stand in that long, ridiculous line at the Comcast store, you're better off having a technician just come and check it all out, have them replace the equipment if they need to. All right, go ahead.
You sort of mentioned AT&T, this gives me my weak connection to this. I'm actually considering dropping AT&T as my mobile provider.
And moving to?
T-Mobile.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that too when the time comes.
Because I've been out of contract for 5 years probably, a long time. And I'm always annoyed about the fact that I pay the same monthly rate as somebody who's getting a new phone. So basically I'm paying a phone subsidy, and that has always annoyed me. And so finally T-Mobile's the first one to step out and say, state outright, instead of you have to call us and give us a secret handshake and passcode that will drop your rate some. Like straight up, if you bring a device and you're not under contract with us, you're not paying us for a device, your monthly rate's lower. So I appreciate that, and so I've been with AT&T since I think 2005, but I think I may just dump them. I check coverage areas. T-Mobile looks like they have decent coverage. Work.
I'm on them now.
Looks like you have to buy a new phone when you do that switch to really get the benefit of it.
No, I don't think so. Not anymore.
Well, no, I mean to really get the full speed benefit in that, because you're using LTE, what phone are you using?
You have to get an LTE phone.
He's using an iPhone.
Yeah, but I don't have LTE on my phone now, so I mean, I can still get HPSA 4G or whatever.
LTE is awesome.
I'll probably buy a new phone eventually, yeah. but for now I can take this one over and still get 4G HPSA or whatever speed.
HSPA Plus. You may not double check that. Is it your iPhone 4?
It's 4S.
4S? Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that Houston has already been switched over to use the 1900 mm-hmm. PCS, mm-hmm. so it should work fine with this. AT&T phone. So
Do it.
But I think I'm going to do it. I think I'll save some money, and I'll also just appreciate the fact that they're having better plan designs for me, because I don't get a new phone every 2 years, so I'm just paying more money for nothing, you know, except to not be in contract.
All right. Well, it just kills me because I was with T-Mobile forever, and I decided I wanted an iPhone. And so I dropped T-Mobile and went over to Verizon and got my iPhone and got my limited data plan and all that nonsense. But and then T-Mobile says, hey, we got the iPhone and unlimited data.
Well, and they, I mean, another problem with T-Mobile at the time, though, you know, was you could take an AT&T iPhone because it's GSM and
right.
or any from anywhere in the world, right, and put it on. But the thing is, the iPhone didn't do 1700 and 2100 frequency, 3G, 4G, whatever. So you could only get edge speeds with an iPhone on there. But now T-Mobile is going in, and a lot of the major areas they've already upgraded. They flipped over, so that now they can do it over the 1900 frequency, which iPhone can do. So now you can get high speed off of T-Mobile as well. So yeah, after you build, they change everything up.
Yep. Oh well. But I have an iPhone. Ta-da! So there's that. All right. Groove House. Let me go with the phone number before I have you do that, though. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we've got two calls in the queue. We've got plenty of open lines. And we'd be happy to talk to you about computer stuff. So give us a call at 713-526-5738. Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with James.
James, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I got a quick question. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it's me or what, but I'm really not feeling Windows 8. I really can't stand it. And I just want to know, are we stuck with Windows 8? Because I was really liking, Windows XP and Windows 7, but Windows 8 is just, it's a bunch of stuff, but it's not really what I need. It's not really good for nothing, but unless you really find what you want to do with it, but I don't need all that. I just need the basic, like, you know, Windows used to have. You know, you could find what you wanted to do and work with it. But now it's just a bunch of stuff. And even, like, it don't do what it used to do. I used to could copy and paste from anywhere. Now it won't copy and paste from certain web pages. So are we stuck with Windows 8?
Well, you're not stuck with Windows 8. I mean, you could conceivably, you could probably, I suppose you bought a new computer that has Windows 8 on it, correct?
Yeah.
All right. You could probably get a copy of Windows 7 and install it on that computer. It would take some effort. It would take some work. You'd either have to figure it out or have someone do it for you. Or you could buy a computer with Windows 7 already on it. You'd probably find those still around somewhere. There's still people that make them. You could do that. Or you could knuckle down and try to figure this Windows 8 thing out.
Windows 8's kind of becoming a little bit more 7-like. Like, there's been a lot of pushback for things that have disappeared, like the start button is kind of back, mm-hmm. things like that.
Well, it's not back yet. There'll be an update coming. Pete talked about this during the news. There'll be an update coming later this year, Windows 8.1, that restores the start button. Doesn't necessarily restore the start menu. You still have the full screen start menu, and you can also boot to the desktop so that when you turn it on, instead of going to the start menu with the start screen with the tiles, you come back up to the desktop. So there are changes coming, and what you may want to do is wait and see what those look like. That'll be a free update, and that might actually make it easier for you to use it.
I'm curious about the problem you're having with, for example, for cut and paste.
Well, like, if I go, like, let's say, for instance, if I want to copy something off the web, off the web, or internet, and paste it into a document or a certain, whatever I have open, it won't paste. It'll still be gray.
With just some sites or with all sites that you're going
to
have? Well,
no, if this site is getting the copy done, fine, but he's not getting the paste. The paste option is grayed out.
Right.
Now, I've seen that where computer won't, you know, it seems that you select your text, copy it, and then you go to paste it, and it's grayed out. I've seen that in operating system, I've not seen it in Windows 8 because I haven't really looked at Windows 7. I've seen it in Windows 7 plenty of times.
Oh, okay.
Not exactly. Okay, well. Now, the clipboard is what the issue is. If something gets weirded out about the clipboard and how you're doing the copy and paste, do you recall if it ever worked for you on the Windows 8?
Yeah, it worked. But like I say, just I guess whatever it is I'm working on, it works, but it happens occasionally. But I never had a problem until now.
I know some sites there. I've ran across a handful of sites that are using JavaScript to be able to disable copy and paste. Yeah, so you, right. Like, for instance, you can't.
But
you know,
you'll notice that. I mean, if you right click on a page and you
can't get the copy button.
You can't get the copy button at all with the websites that have that disabled.
Yeah.
But if he's seeing that he's actually getting the copy, but then he goes to paste and he's not getting the paste off. Option, excuse me, there's a problem with the clipboard.
Well, basically, you guys asked my question. I sound like we're stuck with it.
Well, the thing is with any technology, this stuff's going to keep going forward and changing. Okay. So there's always going to be a new thing on the horizon. When you buy some new computer, you're going to get the new operating system. The hope is, you know, and this doesn't always tend to be true, but the hope is that the new operating systems will be, you know, intuitive and easy to use. Or if you've been using a computer long enough where you've seen an evolution of the operating system, that you've learned enough about the computer to be able to take and build your own computer maybe, or be able to at least install an operating system successfully. Because with this computer that you have now, if you had a copy of Windows 7 and a little knowledge about how to get drivers and install that, you could probably install Windows 7 on this computer.
Yeah.
But by the time you get all that figured out and learn how to do that, you might be better at learning how to use Windows 8.
And that's what I'm saying. I've always avoided Apple because of the learning curve that I had to face. But, I mean, hey, if I have to learn Windows, then I might as well learn Apple then.
Well, that's kind of my philosophy a lot with people that were looking at upgrading to even Windows 7. Once XP kind of went away, or, you know, started to be phased out on new computers, and people that were not terribly computer savvy were thinking, well, I'm thinking about, I need to get a new computer, but I don't know how to use Windows 7. Now I don't know how to use Windows 8. Why not get a Mac if you're going to go ahead and have a learning curve anyway?
Right.
And at least the Mac operating system so far has been pretty steady, and new iterations of the operating system have been very similar to the previous ones. I don't know exactly what Microsoft was thinking with Windows 8. There's some stuff that looks really, really good about it.
It is, but like I say, you guys answered my question, so I thank you very much.
All right, I appreciate your call. Good luck.
Thanks.
I've not heard, I think, since Windows ME, so much animosity towards an operating system.
And I do think a lot of it has to do with people. There's some people, when they get something that's completely new, they kind of get deer in the headlight syndrome. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? And they lock up.
ME deserved it.
Right. ME's issues were not a complete change.
ME was, in my opinion, interface. Was Microsoft saying, like, you know, we're not going to be using this kernel anymore. We're moving over to the NT kernel, so we might as well just wring the last amount of money out of this code base as we can before we ditch it.
Right. Yeah, so that was just
not, it was not very good.
But in this case, it's most people's issues are with the interface, with the changes in the interface. And if you, my argument has been, if you think about it differently, and not try to try to force the paradigm from the older Windows onto this, it actually works. So, for example, in fact, in Windows 8.1, what's going to happen is you have your Windows Start screen, which has the tiles, and the tiles represent specific applications, just like icons did. But there's also a screen that shows all of your applications, all of them.
Yeah, there's a really nice video on YouTube. That's like a 25-minute. There's a short version and a long version of it. It's like the short version, I think, is like a 25-minute video that shows you, it's like seven things or something that if you understand this, it will actually make your interaction with Windows 8.
And if you can get to that complete list of applications, it's like having the start menu, but everything pulled out of the folders so they're all right there. And it's actually fairly simple. People who used in Windows 7 used the search feature to launch things or to find things, which actually can be faster than going through the folders, will like the search feature in Windows 8, which is what surfaces that list of applications. And you know, once I've kind of shown people that, kind of here you get to this and think of it like that, it helps them get over a big hump. But Microsoft does nothing in the setup for it or the preparation for it when you're installing it or you see it for the first time to surface this approach to it. And I think that it's that has really been a big problem for them.
Well, I also wonder about things like, you know, a lot of the people I'm hearing that are having most of the problems with the new operating system tend to be older generation people.
Well, I think the thing is, you know, Dwight talks about being able to shift out of the paradigm and see it from a different perspective. But if all you've known was XP, Windows 7, and that user interface, you don't have any other thing to compare it to. And once you start using it, once you get to that second operating system, then things become a lot easier. But if all you've known is the 2D world, it's really hard to get your head out of there and start thinking
about
the third dimension.
I wonder if people who work in both, like, Mac and Windows or Linux and Windows have an easier time with Windows 8.
Yeah, I would think so, because they know that there are multiple ways to go about doing something, and they can say, okay, each way copy and pasting two different ways, but it's the same concept. There's got to be a way to do it, so you start feeling around doing things. Although, the smartphones have, you know, played a big hand with that, and Android, and, you know, being exposed to a lot of it. It's like being exposed to multiple languages.
I have not bought or used a tablet yet. I use the iPhone, but I haven't bought or used a tablet. And I think there's something about tablet functionality that's different. And I think Windows 8 is designed with the mindset of tablet functionality. And I haven't used Windows 8 very much. I installed it as a virtual, but I haven't really used it. However, I can say I did install a Fedora 18 or something, and it uses GNOME 3 as its default, which is also kind of almost towards like a tablet design or something, and I hated it. Because of the way I do certain things, I like to have multiple virtual desktops where I know where my things. And you can't really do that in GNOME 3. Like, it's just not designed that way. They just open up a new virtual desktop whenever your real estate runs out or whatever or something. Anyway, it was annoying, and so I ended up ditching it and moving my windowing system to KDE. Just because GNOME 3 was not functional for how I used it.
As opposed to a really funky KD5 desktop. but what I was going to say was, you know, I do think that a lot of the people struggling with Windows 8 tend to be an older generation who are using computers as an appliance more than being computer enthusiasts. And they've got a computer, they used it. I mean, if, a lot of people upgrading from XP just because the computer they bought with XP on it is finally dying, and it's time to get a new computer, and it's a dramatic change.
Yeah, I think if you're coming from XP over to Windows 8, that's even
it's
more
pretty
jarring.
Pretty shocking.
Yeah.
But then I hear people talking about things like copying, pasting stuff from web pages, people printing out web pages. The way that people are interfacing with computers is still kind of, they're doing things that I think are rather outdated. It's like people that print out emails, people that print out web pages. I mean, I know that there are situations where that's called for, where that might be necessary, but and I see a lot of times where it's just, it seems so unnecessary. People are not utilizing their computers or even the internet as a means of as a place to go and get data. Instead of copying this web page off to a text document that I save and then I print out, or I just print out the web page, knowing how to get back online and find that again or save a digital copy of it right as a web page or on the hard drive if you want to have the text. I mean, I know there's some situations where I might want to cut and paste something from a website to put into an email to send to somebody, but it's not that common. I'm more likely to cut and paste a tracking number from an email into a website or something like that. But just this whole kind of way that people of a certain age or generation are interfacing with digital information just seems a little outdated. And I think that, not necessarily that is the exact cause, but it's also symptomatic of the problems that people have when they're facing new technology. They're still coming at it from an analog frame of mind.
Right.
And the best example was, you know, I mean, I write a computer column for the Houston Chronicle. I write a newspaper column about computers. And people that, the good number of the people that read my column are senior citizens. And they say, you know, I print your column out all the time, so I have it for reference. And it's all online. I mean, it's about computers, for crying out loud. Go find it online. You go to my blog and search and use the search functionality. And people always have this analog. I had a woman come up to me and I did a speaking engagement for one of the computer users group, had all my articles cut out, you know, all these articles cut out and put in a manila folder and all sorted by what the topic was. And it's like, it's all there online. That to me is symptomatic of, I think, of some of the problems that we're seeing. And technology waits for no one. It's just going to keep going and keep getting faster and weirder, I think. And I'm glad that I got in when I did. And I think I would struggle if I was an analog person trying to use a computer now, just the way it's changing so fast. So who knows? All right, Groovehouse. Wow,
yes.
Got one call in the queue.
Yeah, we do.
We have a little bit of time. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites tonight. 713-526-KPFT. Could talk to Groovehouse, who is not a brony and does not have a poofy tail. Groovehouse, who do we have up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Winston.
Winston.
Yes.
On the air.
Okay, I have two questions that are closely related. One, they're about smartphones, and I was wondering, is there an IT preference for a smartphone like iPhone or an Android phone, or Windows phone? And also, are any of these more susceptible to spyware or malware?
Well, the first one on the IT preference, there used to be. I mean, there used to be a real strong sense that it was Windows phones or nothing for ActiveSync and connecting to an Exchange server, but these days, they all work. If you've got a reasonable IT department, you know, and you've got not even all that sophisticated of an Exchange deployment, they should be able to connect any phone to your email, which is really your biggest concern, I think.
There are some things where it's a little more difficult. For example, iPhone won't pick up the Notes feature out of Exchange. So, you know, there's some kind of fringe cases, but for the most part, they all work well with Exchange.
Now, in terms of the malware question, I think Androids tend to be the most susceptible.
Because of the fact that Windows Phone and the iPhone are curated app stores.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really an issue for those devices. And for Android, if you stick pretty much with the Google Play Store, you have less of an option, although there have been instances where malware has made its way into the Google Play Store before Google can find it and remove it.
Okay. But I would imagine that Google is careful about keeping a good ID on who it is that puts an app on there.
Yeah, once they do it, they'll block you. But, you know, the same thing is
as just, you know, you could come back in and get another ID, get another certificate, and do it again.
Yeah.
They do not curate, and they do not look at things in advance.
They're trying to go in and see what's malware and what's not. They're looking at, like, buying platforms that go in and look at those applications. But the thing is, they're not having a lot of luck. They haven't found a great solution that says, hey, this is malware. Hey, this isn't.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, but it also, I mean, there are, I mean, you get a, start to get a sense of apps and whether or not they're made by reliable developers or not, you know. But if you're looking for more esoteric apps, then you run in, you have a better chance of running afoul of malicious programmers that want to do something to you, like games that I think are probably
games, soundboard, news, rehashing things. I mean, any of, like, the main top-tier applications that exist on the net that offer, like, mobile applications, those can be trusted. But it's when you start to get into, like, you know, things that aren't your, you know, like, your Facebooks or your Google Docs or your Gmails or those big things. That's, you know, it can get kind of dicey.
Right. I mean, if you go and download the Facebook app for your any phone, it's going to be fine. But mm-hmm. if you download a second-tier app that's supposed to allow you some kind of interface to your Facebook account, then I would be wary of that.
So back in April, I'm looking, I did a blog post on this, and I'm looking at the version of it right now from TechCrunch. There was a malware for Android that made its way into the Google Play Store, and it was in several different apps. One of them was a game called Savage Knife that actually became fairly popular and was downloaded millions of times. So before they caught it and removed it.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think that they would keep anybody who submits some app to their store, that they would get, like, picture IDs and actual credit cards of these people and something so that you can prosecute if they turn out to be malware creators.
That seems like a lot of work to police.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only a lot of work to police, but it's so easy to
fake that
legally gotten credit card. You know, it's the world of cybercrime is very Byzantine and very hard to trace. Some of the best police organizations in the world have a hard time.
And it's not individual developers necessarily that are contributing code and applications. A lot of times it's, you know, groups and companies and things like that. So you can go get a DBA or an LLC extremely easily, and then you're back in the game under an entirely new entity.
Yeah, it's not just a matter of show me your ID, please.
Done yeah, that okay. Way. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, well, thanks for your call.
I get that a lot when I do a lot of blog posts about security and malware and hacking on tech blog, and I constantly get comments from, well, why don't they just arrest these people? Why don't they just find them and hurt them? And it's just...
Go get those bank robbers. It's like if they're criminals out there and it's not socially acceptable, people are trying to put a stop to it, but you can't stomp out all crime, especially cybercrime, because it's so hard to police.
Right. There's an excellent writer named Brian Krebs, who is a... I believe at one point in time he was with the Washington Post. He's now off on his own, and he covers strictly security. And nobody kind of goes deeper into the organized crime aspect of cybercrime than he does, and he has some just frightening tales to tell. In fact, he's done such a good job reporting on it that he has become a target of these folks, and someone even named a piece of malware after him, which is probably the ultimate compliment.
Well, I mean, I get you know, I remember when I was younger, I used to have a lot of energy for going after spammers. You know, I mean,
yes, I used to do that.
I used to dig into the headers, and I used to go, and I would find the providers, AUP and TOS.
Yep.
And I would say, you know, please enforce your terms of service against this. You know, I would send it to their proper contacts. I'd CC the spammer, whoever I could. You know, and I was real aggressive about that, and. You know, that kind of behavior, I think, caused spammers to really get good at hiding themselves. Mm-hmm. So now I'm lazy. Now, if you send me a spam and, like, it was just like an act, you know, like, you didn't hide who you were, you know, you send me a piece of spam advertising a product, and people get their feelings hurt, you know? It's like, I didn't mean anything by it. I was just trying to tell you that I had this good thing for sale.
I want to see what happens or what would happen if you got a piece of spam with one of your own photographs so you didn't get permission.
I don't want to see that. That would be horrible. All right. So, yeah, but now it's like when people... for some reason, somehow or another, my work email has made it into the wild of some. I'm getting a lot of vendor calls, but based on the business I do.
Did you go to any shows, or have you been?
No.
Put your...
And it's irritating because I'm getting real emails from real people advertising real products related to my business that they're just wide up. These guys do not realize they're spamming. I mean,
I've seen that.
I don't want to reflect bad on my company. I mean, if it was just me personally, I would let them have it with both barrels. It's like, you ignorant
spammer. Well, you can let them have it politely.
Yeah.
You could say, this is an unsolicited commercial email that's known as spam. Please don't send these to me again. And you can even, do they have the required
link. And I think that, you know, in polite society, which I'm somewhat familiar with, that's the way I should do it. I just hit unsubscribe. But I'm getting, the volume is going up on this. So my work email address has made it out into the wild. And I just want to tell these people, it's like, you know, We're a tech company. We know how to find vendors to sell us the stuff that we need. We can identify the things that we need. We don't want somebody coming in from some fly-by-night data storage.
Or, young whippersnappers who just don't understand how it's done.
Well, you know, and even at the company that I work for, our sales staff sometimes struggles with that idea. They spam for customers. I mean, people are so desperate and so anxious, not desperate, but
numbers,
anxious,
right?
To make their numbers and make sales, you know, and the IT department for these companies has to watch that because we get on blacklists and we have to make sure that our email doesn't get, you know, blackholed.
We've had to watch stuff like that, like a salesperson will come up and say, like, hey, I need this. How can I send 250,000 emails? It's like, well, hold on.
Yeah, wait one second. Cotton picking minute. Yeah.
Why are not going to do that.
Yeah, the trouble ticket that comes in because my email, I sent out 200,000 copies of this email. My Outlook is hung up. Yeah, all right.
What does rate limit mean?
Bad.
Well, it's the joys of tech.
It's so good to be back doing this again after.
You're not going to be here next week, right?
I will not
traveling
be here next week.
But you'll be at the Geek Gathering next week.
I will
week.
Be at the Geek Gathering. I'll be back for the Geek Gathering.
All right, you gonna have a raspberry beret?
Have a raspberry pie?
I don't. Yeah, there we go.
Put it in a beret. Who's got a beret?
We should have a My Little Pony party for that purple rain party. My little purple party.
Or at least publicize it as such, even if you don't do it.
We could invite a bunch of bronies and then duck and cover.
Yeah, because you know a bunch of them now.
I do. I'm tight. Tight with those. You know, it's just that you're just one step closer to unicorns when you go down that path. All right, well, good God, that's another show under our belts. Hooray. You've been listening to Technology Bites. We're so glad you tuned in. We'll be back next Wednesday night here in Houston for more of that.
Another show under our reins.
Groovehouse was so resistant, but he's embracing it. The super happy rainbow fun hour with Brony Groovehouse and friends. It's a hoof party. All right, well, stick around for whatever's coming next and tune in next week for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Yes, he is.
You're the main man, Jay.
Each year, the world's preeminent thinkers, scholars, and activists gather in New York City to discuss the past, present, and future of progressive politics. The Left Forum has featured Michael Moore, Arundhati Roy, and Cornel West, among others. This year, Pacifica brings you complete coverage of the Left Forum. The event, themed Mobilizing for Our Ecological Economic Transformation, is highlighted by linguist Noam Chomsky, filmmaker Oliver Stone, and Bolivia's Vice President Alvaro Linera. Tune into this radio station for coverage of the Left Forum, brought to you by Pacifica, with over 60 years of commitment to the critical voices of our time. Here's when you can hear Left Forum coverage.
Left Forum coverage airs Saturday and Sunday, June 8th and 9th, from 7 to 9 p.m., also streaming at kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
Want to help KPFT but can't make the drive out to the little house on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com/KPFT and facebook.com/KPFT Houston. Then share our links and donate form with your social circles on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.